Hi, this is John Edwards, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. We're qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hami will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the program. This is podcast number 403, January 14th, 2010. Steven?
This edition of F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Nasser. And of course, Steve, it's his turn to be on holiday. Nasser was last week. And of course, NASA is stepping into those big open-minded shoes. On today's program, Ferrari convinced Fernando will beat Schumacher and his GP2 test. Flavio says, I'm not coming back. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the man himself and an interview with Formula Atlantic's team owner, Mr.
Carlos Bobeda.
Thank you very much, Nasser. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you.
How was your holiday?
Holiday was very good on the other side of America. Very cold and had a good time with the family. So back to reality and back to Cali. Not complaining about the 60-degree Fahrenheit weather here. That's for sure.
That's for sure. No, we have it lucky here on the West Coast. So
I heard it on the previous podcast that you did not get the memo that I was going on vacation. I beg to differ with you on that. I think it was discussed.
Excellent. That podcast is recorded after this podcast.
Oh, wow.
The agony and the ecstasy.
Wow.
Your thoughts on Schumacher testing the GP2 car?
Well, I understand there is some rain.
Yeah.
Like he needs some training how to race in the rain. But I'm really looking forward to Mr. Schumacher coming back. And if the package is there, you know, the old man down the road will be mixing it with the young guns and whippersnappers, as you like to call.
So absolutely.
It should be good.
No, it's going to be great. I'm still confused on how he was able to get the GP2 car because it's powered by Renault, but that's another story. But still, the biggest thing I was looking at was no neck problems.
Well, which is very good. And again, you know, like last year when he was trying to get into the Valencia Grand Prix, the comment made by Mr. Luca di Montezemolo was that his enthusiasm trying to get back in at that time was not that of a seven-time world champion, but somebody trying to break into Formula One. So this is not somebody who's going to get into that Braun Mercedes car and asking Ross Braun in the sixth race, where is the brake pedal? So this guy wants to be prepared, and I like his desire to be competitive, you know. Be ready. And that's, you know, one has to appreciate that.
No, absolutely. It's going to be an exciting season. Everybody knows it's going to be an exciting season. Some of the drivers who haven't raced against Schumacher are pretty excited. Lewis Hamilton, for one.
Oh, the great American talent, Jose Maria Lopez.
Of course.
The other.
Well, that was, you know, who was formerly a test driver for Renault.
Oh, yeah. And a GP2 race winning. Pedigree.
Well, since you've opened that can of worms, USF1 is all excited. Peter Windsor came out saying that he can't believe the progress that they have made. And
nor can I.
And they've announced that they'll be testing at Barber Motorsport Park in Alabama, which is a nice facility.
Very nice.
It's very nice. It's a nice track. IRL tests there. And they have a lot of activities there. Also, they've completed their crash test of the nose for the USF1 car. So I know you were impressed with that, Nasser.
Who knows? No, it's the thing is, you know, that all these rumors coming around, statements, counter statements. Again, Bernie's quoted today saying that some of the teams will not be there. And it's getting a little ridiculous, you know. Between now, which is mid-January, and first week of February, it's not too far when the testing starts, we're going to find out who's got it and who. It's one of those things, you know, does she or doesn't she?
That's true. But Peter Windsor is pretty confident. He says, quote, given when we started up in August, it is unbelievable what we have achieved. Windsor commented, just to be where we are with the building is incredible. So to be as far advanced as we are with the car and the rest of the business is fantastico. So Peter is pretty excited.
Well, like I said, you know, there's not many weeks left. Let's hope they are there, and let's hope everybody's there. You know, everybody wants to see a full grid, and we want to see a U.S. team. We want to see Campos Meda, and apparently they are running into some at least
financial
problem, and it looks like they might even want to sell the franchise now, or at least part of it. And, you know, Formula One is not a $10,000-$20,000 operation.
So no, and there's some piranhas running around every once in a while.
Oh, yes, quite a few.
Yeah, but I think Campos...
Especially off the Sardinia coast.
Yeah. I think Campos is questionable. The fact that the team is already up for sale or, quote, they're looking for investors.
Well, we're 2 weeks away from testing. They don't even have a second driver, and they're talking about selling. Same thing with another team, you know, they don't even have a confirmed driver. So I think I'm personally just going to wait and see what happens.
Well, your friend Bernie Ecclestone, he says that I think they're going to have trouble actually getting to the first race, so we'll have to wait and see. And obviously he means who's not going to make it. Bernie's pretty convinced that probably two teams aren't going to make it to Bahrain.
He knows more than all of the people combined.
On the other hand, there's rumors, now this has only been in the Italian press, that USF1 has requested to the FIA to miss the first opening races and not come in until April.
Yeah. I read that.
Peter Windsor denies this.
Yeah. Well, for sure, he's not going to say, yeah, it's correct. You know, but, you know, let's just see what happens. I mean, it's like, this is getting, you know, it's like typical thing, you know, when a famous driver makes a comment about another driver gets moved around, and 3 days later, well, that's not what I meant. So I'm just going to wait. We waited so long, another 2 weeks will pass quickly.
I agree. January 28th, Ferrari unveils their beautiful car, I believe.
How do you know it's beautiful?
It's simple. They've already admitted that it's going to be very similar to the Red Bull RB5. Okay. Which this is what happens. A lot of people copy each other. And I suspect that actually Ross Braun said this at the end of last year, that the new Braun, or now the Mercedes Grand Prix Silver Arrow, will look very similar to the RB5. And I'm hoping that Renault does the same thing and comes out with a car that looks very similar to the RB5.
Okay. Well, they got the engine dead anyway.
Well, that's true. Thank you very much. But what's going to be funny is when the RB6 comes out, it could be a completely new front end and completely look nothing like the RB5. So that would be amusing.
Well, what I read is that apparently the Red Bull car was the most efficient car aerodynamically.
With a typical Adrian Newey design.
Yeah. And then my understanding is the double diffusers are being banned.
For 2011.
2011, not this year.
Not this year.
Okay, so
we'll have double diffusers.
So there will be some crybabies.
There's always going to be some crybabies. And I'm usually one of the first ones. You like that?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. Fernando Alonso put on his red outfit at the... I'm not even sure. Is it the room or the vroom?
Vroom, I think.
The WROOM activities up in the mountains skiing.
Yeah.
And, of course, it includes the MotoGP team from Ducati.
Yeah.
But you have to admit, Fernando looked pretty good in red.
No, I'm looking forward to it. I think he is probably one of the hottest contenders if the package is right.
Oh, I think the package is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Ferrari's pretty serious. And even Heikki Kovalainen, which I know you hold up in high regard.
Oh, absolutely.
He said that...
Very top of Finland.
he said in 2010 it's going to be between Fernando and Lewis Hamilton. Obviously, he's counting out Jenson Button.
Talking of Button, Eddie Irvine was quoted as saying he will murder. He'll be murdered by Button.
Yes,
yeah, so by Hamilton, of course.
Jenson Button, who has had a hard time dealing with the press when he was losing at Braun in the final stages of the 2009 season, sees now that he's facing the press again, and everybody seems a bit fair, even Jackie Stewart.
Everybody
seems fairly confused on why he would be going to McLaren and want to have a teammate as good as Lewis Hamilton.
You know, I try to put two and two together, a very unscientific methodology. My thing is, for any driver, okay, to be able to beat Lewis Hamilton on a regular basis, not one race, they have to be better than Alonso. Let's just, you know, make it very simple. And I'm afraid, on the grid today, I would only consider two guys as good, I will not even go ahead, better than Alonso, as good as Alonso, or capable of beating Alonso. One we already know, the other is the...
Sebastian Vettel?
One who rattle, and the other is Vettel.
Okay, that's...
What do you think?
I agree with you.
I make fun of Alonso, but I have very high regard for him as a race car driver.
I think, and what I found very interesting is McLaren coming out saying they're making extra sure. Because, you know, of what happened in 2007, that everybody is even Steven. And so now they've split, they've added new engineering teams for each one, so everybody starts fresh under one umbrella, of course.
Well, you know, people make all these things. Heck, you always have to start with heavy fuel, blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you, Clark, at the end of the day, in the long haul, Crema comes to the top.
No, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait.
Winners find a way to win a race. It's as simple. Whether you change a strategy mid-race, you go from 3-stop to 4-stop. We've seen all these things. And a guy can lead a race for 80% of the race, and the last 10 laps, there's a little sprinkle of rain, and you know what happened there. It was your man who won the race. So winners find a way. So but you know what would be great? If Button can be extremely competitive against Hamilton,
that would be exciting.
Everybody wrong.
He would, and basically that's what he has to do.
Yeah, and that's a lot of pressure. You know, being in Formula One is pressure enough. Now you have everybody doubting you. I mean, it's not a rosy picture.
Well, it's going to be the season of pressure.
It's going to be like, you know, when they show up at the first test. You know, here is a team with Michael Schumacher and Nico Rosberg. What do you think the journalists are going to ask Nico Rosberg? So what do you think?
They're probably going to ask him, you know, what cologne Shumi wears. You know, how's Shumi doing today?
And he'll probably say, I haven't seen him. He's been testing since 5 in the morning. That's what's going to happen.
No, but it's going to be season of pressure for Nico, for Massa, for Button, for Weber. Right. And that's it's going to make it a great season. Now, I heard something today I thought was fascinating is, you know, we have a new point system coming in.
Yeah.
Which is, it's going to make it, it's not as big as NASCAR.
Yeah.
But we're going to have bigger points.
Yeah, but now they're talking about tweaking the system already.
Bernie wants to tweak it. They're talking about tweaking it. And I thought there was some, you know, and now there's talk, you know, Bernie was talking about putting a bigger gap between first, second, and third, because that way the drivers aren't just driving for points, but a bigger gap would initiate some overtaking in the sport, more overtaking. And Bernie came up with another conclusion or idea that maybe we should put shortcuts on the track.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious. Very serious. This is a serious podcast. Yes, shortcuts. Where a driver could take a shortcut, but then he'd get a penalty later. And
no, we don't want a freak show.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like throwing a phantom caution.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I mean, they should have a rule. Anybody takes a 10-second lead, automatic caution.
Automatic caution, but you have to say it that way.
But then again, they can also come up with the idea, any 10-second difference between places, fourth and fifth, caution just for them. like a restricted caution, competition caution.
I love competition caution.
No, you know, starting a race with what? What happened the other day with the green and yellow? Come on. How crazy can you get?
A green and a yellow together?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, we just want a simple race like it used to be, you know.
I understand.
Yeah, we don't need this. You know, this whole idea of Flavio and Bernie to bring the show, spruce up the show. You know, people watch motor racing for motor racing, not for freak shows. But I'm very happy wheel covers are gone.
Me too. Those were hideous and problematic.
And the shark fin thing that Red Bull New started, I also don't. I want a racing car to look like a racing car.
Yes, I think the shark fin's still in.
I think so, unfortunately.
But I think the cars are going to look pretty good with longer wheelbases, a little bigger butt. And we like big butts here at F1 Weekly.
Okay, sir, mix a lot.
Exactly. So there you have that. Quickly, Adrian Sutil came out saying that the tracks are too safe. That's why it's routine, boring to drive, and no overtaking.
But Monte Carlo was not too safe for him.
Well, I think he's talking more of the Tilke, you know, tracks, the new generic generation, not necessarily Monza, but still, I thought he made a good point.
Everybody has an opinion on everything.
Well, you know, and these guys probably should have their own podcasts, I understand.
Adrian Sutil, yeah. But, you know, the thing is, some of the tracks, I think the problem is not so much as the track. It's the what you call je ne sais quoi of motor racing is being taken away.
It has. I mean, some of the large runoff areas, cars, almost most cars, actually in 2009, we had very few cars crash or have mechanical problems. It was either mistakes by drivers or most cars finished the races.
But, you know, every year in 6-8 months, we have this, there'll be no French, there'll be no British Grand Prix, or German Grand Prix isn't that. I mean, you know, we want to get rid of this thing. You want some traditional races, and they can take a race to, you know, Uganda or
Uganda.
You know, Uzbekistan or whatever they want, wherever there is oil.
Sofia.
Yeah, exactly. What a joke that was. Bulgaria was going to have a Formula One race. You got to be kidding. I think Procter and Gamble has a bigger bank account than Bulgarian government.
Okay, let's hope nobody in the Bulgarian parliament is listening. They could sponsor, you know, Nasser.
Oh, yeah.
Before we go to break, Virgin Racing has announced John Booth has been appointed team principal. Virgin Racing seems to be moving along. No big problem so far. They've got a lot of cash, which is what you want.
Yes, they have a lot of money.
Are you familiar with John Booth?
Yeah, Miner team, racing team. And the guy who was Mr. Ty, I believe, who has been replaced, he was like the main guy of Richard Branson. But, you know, there are going to be a lot of, you know, all these people who are jumping in, Richard Branson, Vijay Mallya. Even Vijay Mallya himself said after the first season, it was a bit of a big, the F1 curry was more spicy than he thought.
Wow.
Yeah, or worse to that effect.
Wow, that's a big statement. Okay, quickly, in USF1, we go back to them before we go to break. They announced that their team manager is going to be, I believe, another Mr. Anderson.
Yeah.
From
IndyCar Racing.
IndyCar Racing and American Le Mans Series. He worked for
Gilles de Ferrand. Yeah, he was in IndyCar Racing for many, many years.
And he's probably a good manager. Probably a good choice. Probably fits within their budget.
Yeah.
So I think USF1 will announce drivers in a week or two.
You think so?
Yeah, and I'm pretty excited about it.
And who do you think they will be?
They're going to be non-Americans.
So we'll be up to 52 states then?
Yeah, it's going to be a flip-flop. Well, maybe they can get a Puerto Rican in there or something.
Yeah.
At least a territory.
Yeah.
So, no, well, that's...
Buscabuya might be available.
Very possible.
Yeah,
very
he has contacts at Williams, right? So he's...
That's true.
He's a F1 veteran.
I agree. So anyway, there you go. Any predictions for Bahrain?
Any prediction for Bahrain?
We're close enough to make predictions now.
I think Fernando Alonso is going to win that race. Unfortunately, not in a Renault, in a red machine.
That's okay.
If
Renault doesn't win, then we'll give it to Fernando. I might wear a red shirt once in a while this year.
I'm looking forward to that argument between him and Massa again in Italian.
Oh, it's going to be exciting. We'll see what happens, but I predict Ferrari will be very, very strong.
I think it will be between Hamilton, Alonso, and what Martin Brundle called Vettel.
Excellent. Okay, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial. And, of course, we have a special interview with Mr.
Señor Carlos Bobeda of Argentina, team owner in Formula Atlantics.
Thank you. We'll be back after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more and see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings, and we can still be friends. Regards from Nicole Scherzinger, also known as Pussycat Doll. Mr. Rogers, I don't know about you, but I was on the East Coast when I heard the news, and I had an achy breaky heart. How are you taking this?
I handled it just fine.
Really?
It was time. Hamilton is too young to be hanging around just one woman. You should have flocks of women.
Oh, that's good. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to miss the lady in red jumping up and down next to Martin Whitmarsh and Pepito Hamilton. I mean, she was quite an attraction in the pits.
Well, Jensen Button's girlfriend will be there jumping up and down.
I've never seen her jumping down in the pit lane.
Neither have I, no.
I've never
seen her. But she's very attractive.
Yes, she is. She's like part Argentine, part Japanese. And I've never seen Alonso's, Mrs. Alonso, by the way. Have you seen
because,
her?
Because, see,
she's camera shy.
Men are fairly chauvinistic, and women stay at the house, cooking and cleaning and that sort of thing.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've never seen a photo of her.
Fernando's got it all under control.
Well, that's good. I hope he keeps it that way. Okay, so very some interesting news, especially for American racing fans. Alexander Rossi signs with ART Grand Prix team for the GP3. Inaugural GP3 season. And of course, we've interviewed him a few times recently also. And last year, Rossi raced in Formula Master, won 3 races, and was Rookie of the Year. And won Rookie of the Year title, I should say. He will renew his racing rivalry with Mexican talent Esteban Gutierrez. Both raced in their rookie year in Formula BMW here in the US, and this year will be teammates at ART. So this should be quite a few pairing. And another driver who has been signed up is Paul Warhol. He's from Norway. He'll be with a different team. So I think in the next few weeks we should know most of the lineup. There's a kid named Michael Christensen. He did very well in Formula BMW. He's also signed up for GP3. But it's good to have at least one American in.
Absolutely. Fantastic news.
Yeah, and he's in the right series. And it will be very interesting. As you know, it's going to be your favorite series also. Renault engine, turbo engine.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, tires are supplied by Pirelli, who looks like maybe the leading candidate to replace Bridgestone. But we'll see how it goes. Pedro de la Rosa is, you know, his name. You know, a very, very reliable source a few months ago told me that Pedro de la Rosa, this guy knows what's going on. So I asked him any news on the USF1 program. He said, Pedro de la Rosa and Jonathan Summerton. And I said, how sure are you of this? And he says, done deal. So Pedro de la Rosa is not there as we speak, and Jonathan Summerton is not with their team also.
Well, what's really funny is Peter Sauber mentioned that he was going to possibly sign somebody, but it's going to be a surprise. Now, do you have any news on this, what this surprise could be?
Coming Pedro de la Rosa was a
but see,
surprise.
If it's Pedro de la Rosa, that's not a big surprise. I mean, he's been hanging around the F1 paddock since 1974.
Very true.
So I'm wondering what Peter or Petter Solberg, or I'm sorry, Petter Solberg, but Petter Sauber is thinking when he says it's going to be a big surprise. So I'm curious, because there's not that many. Schumacher was the big surprise of the season. There's nothing else.
Eddie Irvine would be a big shocker.
Oh, no, I've got a better one, a big shocker, and this came to me today. Hans-Harald Frentzen. That's it.
Hans-Harald Frentzen? Yeah. Yeah, very true.
HHF.
Yeah. And, you know, I met Pedro de la Rosa, I think it was at the first U.S. Grand Prix, and, you know, the beauty of the, you know, everything is outsourced these days. I went to the, he was with Eros, right, at that time, if I'm not mistaken, and there were some people setting up the Eros thing. I walked up to them, I said, is Mr. Jackie Oliver here? And this guy said to me, who?
Pedro de la Rosa said
that? No, some other guy.
Oh.
Was with, you know, the event management.
Oh, of course. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was a long time ago, but even, you know, even then, Jackie Oliver was already forgotten.
And this, a couple of years ago when I was at the Autosport show, I went to the media center, and this lady was helping me. She said, she called Christian Horner on my behalf, and got him on the phone, and he was already leaving, and she had a list of all the people who were there. So I, amazing, I said, I'm looking at this list, and I said, wow, can you call Pat Simmons, please? And so she called somebody at the Renault area there. They had a big display there. I go, by the time I got there, which was like less than 10 minutes, they're asking me, who's Pat Simmons? I said, jeez, but these things happen. It's called outsourcing anything and everything.
They're trying to save money, Nasser.
I understand that. Talking of money, we come to Money Matters.
Exactly.
According to... Oh, talking of money, where is the Christmas... Have you seen Christmas bonus, Mr. David Tapia? He did not get his bonus. He's so disappointed, he's sick now. You gotta do something about this, Clark.
Dude, I'm just a simple pool cleaner.
Well, you know... Fish up some money. Anyway.
Sure. I'll dig some up.
Please do. Money Matters, according to Formula Money, a publication about the business side of Formula One. In the last 5 years, the six car manufacturers involved in the sport spent over $6 billion. This is more than 45% of the money spent by all car manufacturers combined in the past 60 years of Formula One. This is how out of control this thing was.
It was out of control.
It was super out of control. The number, I would say they were probably flying more than two times the people needed to run a Formula One team. You know, all sorts of people were going, two or three PR people, writer, this and that. It's ridiculous.
It was a black hole.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen to this. Leading the spending frenzy was Honda with $1.47 billion dished out. Second was Toyota with $1.46 billion. Well spent on investments like Ralph Schumacher, one-hit wonder Jarno Trulli, and Captain Charles Lindbergh of F1, Mr. Mike Gascoigne, who, if you recall, was flying from England to his job in Cologne. That was a beauty.
You know, they're willing to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, you like Jacques Villeneuve said, you know, Formula One is a very specialized business. You know, you want people who are in the business. Night and day, that's all they know, that's all they do. You don't bring an Ivy League man, an MBA graduate from all over the world to run a show. I mean, you know, just every time I would listen to the gentleman from Toyota, John Howard. Now, I'm sure he's done a very good job for Toyota. He's a big marketing guy. It was obvious, this is not a racing guy. Racing guy is Ron Dennis. Eddie Jordan, Luca Di Montezemolo. I mean, this is all they know. I'm bringing Flavio for that matter.
Flavio, bravo, bravo.
Yeah, that's coming too here. Okay, so, and those who are interested in buying Formula Money, please visit www.formulamoney.com. It is only 175 British pounds, plus VAT, plus shipping and handling and whatever that they can stuff in. So if anybody has a copy, let us know what's in it. We don't buy 175 pounds. Magazines or books, do we?
Not us, no. We borrow them.
Okay, now from Money Matters, you go to Swiss Money. Nestle may use their Nespresso brand on Peter Sauber's 2010 car. Nestlé's chairman, this talks about, you know, how one thing is linked to another. Nestlé's chairman, Peter Brabeck Lemoth, I don't know, apologies if I'm screwing up his last name. He is a member of the board of the Formula One Group and Credit Suisse, who used to be a BMW Sauber sponsor. You know, there used to be a brokerage house, First Boston here in the U.S., First Boston, that became First Boston CS something. It's just taken over by Credit Suisse. Now we come to No Hit Wonders. This, you know, it's this off-season, so I'm trying to get as much interesting information that I enjoy reading and I would like to share it with our hello listeners. This is what I call, this is No Hit Wonders. Top three drivers with no Grand Prix wins. Number one, Andrea De Cesaris, winless after 208 starts, of course now retired. His Pepito was Marlboro distributor for Italy, confirming where there is smoke, there is fire. In the case of De Cesaris, there was not much fire, unfortunately. He did start the Long Beach Grand Prix from pole position in his Alfa Romeo many years ago, before living up to his nickname in Formula One, the Crasheris.
That's terrible.
Yeah, these things happen. Quick Nick is second with zero wins after 167 Grand Prix starts, and Martin Brundle is third with 158 starts. Has Quick Nick been picked up by anybody?
No, he's still out there floating. I was hoping that he would be the surprise for Sauber. He's a perfect fit, having been at Sauber for years. But that would be no surprise.
Yeah, he went to Sauber with the industry because he was a McLaren driver.
Correct, and they didn't.
He was put there to, you know, groom for F1.
I know, this is so
then,
sad.
And then, you know, Kimi Raikkonen talked his way. I mean, you cannot use that word, he talked his way into a situation. He drove his way. That was a pretty impressive thing, man. I still cannot believe somebody, some kid can go from 23 motor races to a Formula One seat.
And now, he's in a C4 Citroën.
Yeah, there you go. I saw it was on Autosport.com. He had his first run.
Yeah, he's pretty excited about it. He's pumped up.
Oh, yeah. He must be a chatterbox now, seeing two full sentences.
You know, maybe French is our language for him. I don't know.
Yeah, but I tell you, if he wins a major rally, which I hope he does, that'll make a big, big statement.
Oh, yeah, it would be huge for his career.
Yeah. Okay, Lotus, new and old. The magical name is back this year under new management and Malaysian ownership. The original team, founded by ACBC, Anthony Colin Bruce Chapman, scored the first Grand Prix. Not of America in the history of Lotus. Check this out. Team Lotus' first Grand Prix win was in 1961 at Watkins Glen. Winner was Innes Ireland of Scotland. Final F1 win was also in America in the streets of Detroit with Mr. Ayrton Senna at the wheel. And last Lotus World Champion was from Pennsylvania, Mr. Mario Andretti, in 1978. And interestingly, the very first Grand Prix victory by a Lotus car was not from Lotus team, it was from Rob Walker's private when Stirling Moss won. So, the new Ferrari, you already mentioned about this, according to world-famous Italian technical journalist Giorgio Piola, the new Ferrari will have some similarities with last year's Red Bull F1 machinery, and thanks to no refueling, the 2000 F1 Ferrari will be about 30% more heavier. So this will really come into play at drivers who can do proper tire management.
Tire management will be everything, obviously.
Yeah. And this really goes back to the early 70s, you know, that if you ran away and you wear out your tires and you have to come in, chances were you're not going to win the race.
Very true.
Or you were fighting to finish second or third.
Yeah, and don't forget they're going to have narrower front tires now.
Yes, you stole my script, but that's okay.
That's my job.
Yes.
But, you know, what I like about the new narrower front tires is the cars are going to look nice and racy because for a long while, the front tires were the same size as the rear tires. And now I think we're going back to the vintage days when the front tires are always a little bit smaller. I mean, look at the six-wheeler, the Tyrrell. Wow! That was exciting.
But, I mean, they will be narrower, right?
Narrower. Always still the 13-inch rims.
Yeah, okay.
That hasn't changed.
Yeah, the old style was very... The 70s, 80s was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Yes, sir. Days gone by. Now, here we go. No bravo, bravo for Flavio. Ex-Benetton driver, Frenchman Jean Alesi, quoted in German Bild magazine, and I quote him, "He is an obscene person who threatens and forces his drivers. He behaves like a mafia boss," end of quote. Now, if tomorrow Alesi is floating, head down in Sardinia or, somewhere in Sicilia, you know who's responsible.
Exactly.
Okay. And Ferrari team principal Stefano Domenicali was quoted by La Stampa as saying, "People don't like reheated soup. He will have to find another opportunity." I like the reheated Campbell soup.
I love reheated soup.
Yeah.
But I live, that's how I live.
The sophisticated life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll see. La Stampa newspaper, I don't know now, but many, many years ago, it used to be owned by the Agnelli family, who were owners of Fiat also. Okay, now, this is very, very important, Mr. Rogers. A lot of thought went into this with you in mind. Okay. The new year brings a new segment. This is called the Diana Ross Lady Sings the Blues segment. Are you ready for this?
Okay, I'm getting blue already.
You already have a blue cap, so you came here ready for this. You know, when you're flying, the friendly skies can be very lonely and boring. You know, hours and hours of just flying. And the way things are these days, no headphones, no movies, and just pack in and go. So I normally take a few old copies of Motorsports and F1 Racing magazines or some racing book. This time, onboard service included interviews with Jean Alesi, Ross Brawn when he was at Ferrari, and many other interesting features and race reports. And one of them was in the January 2007 issue of F1 magazine. And it had gone around and spoke to almost all the grid drivers and asked them a question: what was your best and worst decision in life? That's a very important question. What was your best decision in your life? Meeting David Tapia and Steve Farr?
Sure, Ness.
Yeah, of course, of course. But today we will share with our listeners, and especially you, the answer given by the 2005 and 2006 Formula One world champion, the one and only man from La Mancha. Who would that be?
Fernando Alonso, el hombre macho de España.
Exactly. The best decision, and you have to give him credit when a guy goes out on his own and makes a big decision. The best decision he ever made up to that point in his life, all on his own and without any guidance from professional Papa Flavio. And in his own words, I quote, "joining McLaren," end of quote. Proving once again, even muy macho hombre de Oviedo is not perfecto.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And that's what those old magazines, that's why they're so great to bring on a flight and read some of this stuff. Because it's off, most of the time it's going to be fairly amusing.
Yeah, well, this is amusing.
I'm sure it is, since you're hooked on this 2007 season forever.
It was a great season.
It was a great season.
And a man who came in from the call and won the championship. But, some years ago I was reading a magazine. It was, again, F1 magazine. That was very, very interesting. I'll dig it up and bring it here. It had a big story on a full-page story, a picture of Liuzzi and Jean Todt, and in big bold letter it says that Ferrari signs long-term contract with Liuzzi, and then it's like, there was a rush to sign him on because he was very impressive. He was world champion in karting. He dominated the final F3000 series, and it says that, but Jean Todt has beaten them all and signed the young Italian multi-year contract, and look where the poor guy is now. He's the guy who got a raw deal, in my opinion.
Well, we know F1 is brutal, past Nick Heidfeld.
Oh yeah, Christian Kleen too.
Yeah, Christian Kleen as well.
Yeah.
And he may be the surprise driver for Sauber. There's been talks about him coming back, so there you have it, Nasser.
Who do you think they should take? They already have...
Honestly?
They have... That guy, Japanese guy, right? Kobayashi.
Yeah, the Kobayashi is their driver.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. The guy was he was prepared, and he had his book out, How to Cut Sushi for Dummies.
Yeah. And that just goes to show, you know, I mean, if you really perform well, you will get rewarded.
No, now exactly.
Now the heat on him is to perform like that.
Every day. No, yeah. Absolutely. But I'm happy he signed.
No, a lot of people are happy, and I'm one of them.
But I still think he's an inexperienced driver, and the trend in Formula One today is to sign a young driver and an experienced driver. So we know where Rubinho is going to be next to Nico Hülkenberg, and we don't talk about Rubinho very much anymore on this show.
Well, you know, what is there to say about him? You have to give him half a season to find the brake pedal at the Williams, you know. I'm going to give him
four. I know you've been giving him flack for this brake pedal thing for years.
Well, there's a reason for everything. Okay, it's the same thing with the 2007 season. The reason for this is, if you're taking half of the season, then don't go out complaining that Ferrari, they held me back. I mean, that kind of... I mean, the guy's a great guy, good racer, but, you know, that package is not going to beat Michael Schumacher. I'm sorry.
Right. No, I think Sauber should go ahead and take Heidfeld. You know, he's a proven, steady driver.
Nobody's talking about Romain Grosjean and Jaime Alguersuari.
Those guys,
you know,
great performances.
Do you remember how excited I was about Grosjean when he was in F3 Euro Series, which was only 2 years ago?
And then
he
was
doing very well in GP2.
Absolutely.
He gets a little, chance, just like a lot of people do, and then basically just, you know, did nothing.
Well, he didn't do what our friend did. Was that perform?
And who's that for friend?
No, the new driver at Sauber.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do that. I mean, that's the thing, you know, about not just Formula 1, any series, you know. If you have not raced in Formula 3, don't go to GP2.
And I totally agree, and that's Grosjean is out.
But at least he has picked up a very lovely girlfriend, the French pit lane.
And he was smart not to quit his day job.
Yeah, and nobody's even talking about Jaime Alguersuari.
But you know, well, he's still a possibility at Toro
Rosso. That was a very, very bad move to come into. See, again, it's easy to say this, but then again, if Red Bull is paying your bills, and that's what they tell you, what are you going to do? If you say no, then they'll kick you out.
Yeah.
And because I even read that they might even try this young Italian, Mirko Bortolotti, who won the Italian Formula 3 Championship a couple of years ago.
I remember that.
And he's pretty good talent. But, I mean, he needs, I would say, at least...
He's still too young.
Yeah. Does not even have the experience.
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
I think that a driver should have at least, just my an average good driver, at least 3 years of serious motor racing before they even go into GP2. Because GP2 non-Clark is basically a one-chance deal. If you don't win the first year, then... it's over.
I agree, Nasser. Another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Of course, the interview comes back after the break. So we'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, for our weekly interview, Nas, please introduce this Formula Atlantic's team owner.
Yes, sir. This is Señor Carlos Bobeda, originally from Argentina. He raced there. He raced here in the U.S. and has been running a team in Formula Atlantic's for many, many years. And this conversation took place at Laguna Seca a few months ago, actually, at the season finale. And I would like to thank him for his time. It was very nice chatting about motorsports in South America and worldwide. And hope our listeners enjoy this conversation.
Ready, right?
Oh, I have problems hearing, so I'll try to answer your questions.
Okay, I'll speak louder. Okay, folks, I'm here with a gentleman from the land of Fangio and Lully. Senor Carlos Bobeda, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
Oh, very well. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very nice meeting you. Please tell us what part of Argentina are you from and what are your earliest memories of motor racing?
Well, I'm from Buenos Aires, Argentina. I'm actually a little bit on the outskirts of Buenos Aires, about half an hour from there. And my introduction to racing, is that what you wanted to know?
Yes, sir.
We used to drive a taxi cab when I was there, and one day I decided, asked my father if I could use it in a race. Almost, he didn't agree much with me, but you know, then 2 weeks later we were both driving. That's how we started.
Okay, and how did you do in your first race?
I finished sixth or something like that. It was okay. I realized that I didn't know how to race. I learned later.
Okay, very interesting. Now, your actual racing career started in 1966. I know you have this Touring TC 2000, very big series in your country. What series did you take part in Argentina?
Oh, no, I didn't race much in Argentina. I raced, there was a class called Falcon Standard. There were for Ford Falcons, and they were with very little preparation, and that's what I raced. And I raced probably four or five of those races, and that was it. Then I moved to the States, and I did most of my racing here.
Okay, when did you move here, and have you been in California since you moved here?
No, I started in New Jersey in 68, and then went back to Argentina, and then I decided to come here for good. And came to California in 71.
Now, you've done quite a bit of racing here. What series did you do here?
Yeah, I raced here, started in, as a mechanic first in 73. We were doing Formula 5000. We had drivers of the caliber of James Hunt and Lela Lombardi and Elliot Ford Robinson. And then later on, I started racing myself in Formula 4. I started Formula 4, and you know, I ended my racing days in prototypes here in IMSA, and I haven't raced since, you know. But I had the shop since 1976.
Okay. Now, Formula, you know, you mentioned a couple of names there. It has series has seen names like Gilles Villeneuve, Keke Rosberg, Michael Andretti in the past. What is the future of the series these days?
Formula Atlantic, you know, it actually has a great future. It's out of all the years I've been involved with it, which has been many, I've been involved in it since 1966. This is the best package that we have, reliability-wise, and it's very depending on the driver more than the funding. It's ideal. You know, we go to a little bit of a rough time, mainly because when Champ Car ceased to operate, we were a support event for it, and now we're kind of orphans. But it's gonna pick up again. You know, this unfortunately coincide with the bad economy and new ownership. So we are very hopeful that you know, starting next year, more than likely, it's gonna be better.
Just as an average, approximate number, how much it costs to run? Let's say if a driver wants to go Atlantic. What is the budget requirement for this series compared to Indy Lights?
Oh, it's a lot lower. You know, you can do a very competitive package from anywhere from $400,000 to $600,000. You know, while Indy Lights, you're talking $800,000 to $900,000.
If the cost was same, which series would you recommend? Let's say you were not owning a team in Formula Atlantic. Mm. If the cost of running a young driver was same, which series prepares a young driver better for future, you know, top line racing?
I honestly tell you, it's Atlantics. I mean, you know, we have drivers like Frank Pereira. Now he ran very competitive with us. We finished second in the championship. We won the championship the year before, and Pereira went to Indy Lights, and it really didn't. I mean, it wasn't so king of the cars and stuff like that, but I'm not saying that because it's the rival series. I wish Atlantic, in a way, would introduce a couple of ovals on the schedule, so it'd be more versatile when it comes to drivers coming out of Atlantic, and also, aside from the road racing, would acquire some experience on ovals. That would be the only point. But other than that, the cars are very good to teach drivers how to get, you know, the speed out of them. They are difficult to drive enough, so very few can drive them well. But at the same talking, They are very safe, very reliable, and also a driver can progress on them.
Okay, is there any push or request with Mr. Ben Johnston to introduce a couple of road oval races? And if you do, can you use the same car or does it have to be a new chassis?
No, I think the chassis will be fine because we used to race ovals before with the 008. You know, it won't be an issue with the chassis. I think more than likely it's not going to happen, at least not next year. And it probably is more of a sanctioning issue than not wanting to do it.
You've been in Atlantic as a team owner for over a decade. Series has seen a lot of good drivers. Of all the drivers that have come and gone through your team and in the series, who do you think were really good drivers?
That I run personally, I have to say the best one I had, the most complete driver I ever had was Charles Schwarzman. It wasn't just very fast in the car. It was very analytical. He didn't miss absolutely anything. You know, he was doing 170 miles an hour through a corner, and you'll remember every little pebble and wrinkle on it. That was the most complete, you know. Pereira was excellent also. The type of drivers that, you know, on the radio, telling we need a 10 to get the pole, and they get you two, and, you know, two laps later, they need another two, and you squeeze it out of the car. Very good, very good.
Among other drivers, who were your competitors? Who were you impressed with?
Actually, it's just a lot of them. You know, I'm very impressed with Simona this year. You know, she's been in the class for about 3 years, and she was so fast before, but you know, she's very consistent. She had pretty good improvement. Summerton also, you know, is the type of driver that in many classes that he competed always was up front. It's very good. And there's six or seven guys here right now that are very, very, very good. You know, that undermined it because we have a very small field now, so it doesn't look like much, but they're all very quick.
Now, let me ask you a question. You know, every young driver, you know, from the days he's in karting, he thinks he's the next Fangio or Senna. What is the most common mistake drivers make when they get to a pretty serious business, which would be Formula Atlantic, that you see in your experience?
My experience is, you know, a lot of them go to a driver's school, whether to be, you know, a pay driver school or a SCCA driver school, and they win the first race, and absolutely they think they're Ayrton Senna, you can't teach them anything, and it's always the car, it's not them. And I think that's the most common mistake I've seen.
And how do you knock reality into their heads?
I'm sorry, I missed
that. How do you bring them back to reality after they don't win those first 10 races?
Oh, you know, a lot of them are intelligent enough to realize and follow advice. You know, once they smack their face against the wall a couple of times, you know, they put it in reverse and say, okay, maybe, you know, what they're telling me is what it is. And some of them, they're unteachable. They just, you know, the attitude is not there, and it doesn't happen. And you see it that they last in the sport for 2-3 years and then completely disappear. And the good one, the one that put the effort, they progress.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best, how satisfied are you with the performance of your team and drivers this season?
Well, this year, it's an unfair question because this year there were a couple of issues where we started really late. The series didn't offer a platform for us to be able to offer to the drivers and attract them here until March. So by the time that happened, you know, there were very few drivers available. And when I say available, it's not just the talent. Unfortunately, it requires some budget, so they didn't have a sponsor or we couldn't provide it. So going back to the question, and now 1 to 10, our performance, I don't think, was much better than 5 this year. You know, we were encountering a lot of financial problems, and we depended heavily on prize money, and a couple of things happened that prevent us from, you know, getting it, and so it reflects on results.
Now, you mentioned sponsors, and you mentioned the tough economy we are in. Let's going back 5 years when we were not in this financial meltdown, how hard or easy it was to sell a sponsorship to corporate America for Formula Atlantic?
It was still difficult. You know, the sponsorship part is something that classes on the category of ours, which is a feeder series for the bigger events, The drivers don't get, or the sponsors don't get, as much exposure as they will, for instance, in Champ Car or Indy cars. I mean, it's easier. I'm not going to say it's easier, but it's probably you get more attention when you try to sell the Indy 500 than when you try to sell an Autronic program, because, you know, the value sometimes is not there for the corporation to justify to the stockholder. So it makes it a little bit more difficult.
Now, going back to your native land, what will it take to have the next Grand Prix driver from Argentina like Fangio or Reutemann?
You know, I think what it always takes is the support of the country. In the past, we used to have those drivers because the government was also, you know, was also supporting them with opportunities to do it. When I got introduced to racing there, the first thing that caught my attention, well, aside from Fangio, unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember Fangio races on the radio.
Really?
But, you know, what caught my attention was a race I did at the Nürburgring, you know, the 24-hour race on Nürburgring. And that was partially heavily supported by the government. So it was a big support for the sport. Keep in mind that automobile racing, although I've been away from Argentina for about 40 years, at one point it was number one sport, second to soccer, which is, you know, pretty heavy statement.
Yeah. And you have a very nice new track in a town called San Luis. Have you seen the track or have you been there?
No, unfortunately, like I said, I've been away for almost 40 years, so No, I don't know many of the modern facilities.
It is beautiful. Bernie has been talking about a street race in Buenos Aires. Do you think this will happen?
If Bernie makes money on it, probably, yes.
Is enough meat being exported from Argentina to make it happen?
Yes. You might.
Okay, I thank you for your time. And finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world, including Latin America.
Well, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be able to talk to you and give me the chance to at least say hello. And please tune in on racing. It's a great sport and very exciting. And once you get involved, it's really hard to leave.
And please tell our listeners the name. What is your website?
It's www.condormotorsports.com.
Gracias, señor.
Muchas gracias.
Okay, very nice talking to you.
Thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to the wrap-up. And now we have our form updates. Now my turn to do Steve's job. Okay, thanks Tricky Dick for the form updates. Michael Schumacher's GP2 testing was a focal point, as was the future prospects of USF1. Yeti has made a bold statement claiming that Sato will be driving for Renault this season. There are also suggestions of Alexander Wurz come back after the FIA made it clear that DC would not be returning to the grid. The Dakar rally has been a hot topic on the forum, so anyone interested in it should really check out the thread. Nelson Piquet Jr.'s possible NASCAR drive has also sparked debate. Here is Frank Douglas's view. Plenty of intentional crashing going on there. I bet he'll do just great. In the off-topic discussions, boobs, bums, legs, Jack Nicholson, buses, and Carrie Katona have all been discussed. Ye uploaded a picture of his partner. Everybody was impressed by her charming good looks, other than the ever-annoying yet lovable Jackson. Finally, the forum found out that Lewis Hamilton and his girlfriend Nicole have split up. This was devastating news for us all, and a day of remembrance has been announced. As always, Koala was quick off the mark with his hotness-based responses. That's all for this week. Keep up the good work for the forum updates. The forum is a lot of fun. Please check it out if you haven't, and become a member. You get one of those free members jackets.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, everybody loves those. Okay, we've got an email here. We've got a couple, but we're running out of time. This is a nice long email, and I'm going to try to run through it, but it's very, very nice. It's from Barney Henderson, and it's great stuff. Hi, I'm an English racing fan. A few months ago, I was suffering Formula One withdrawal symptoms and decided to go hunting for a regular podcast that would keep me up to date
with all the latest news and on driver shuffles, excuse me, car developments, etc. Over the winter, I searched iTunes and found F1 Weekly. But I was so disappointed when I heard the first few sentences. Oh no, a bunch of Americans, what would they know about Formula One? Okay, I admit it, I'm a judgmental bigot, but you must admit that most Americans would not know which country Spa-Francorchamps was in, let alone any of the rich history behind that circuit. However, having listened to your podcast for the last 6 weeks, I've been really impressed with the team's knowledge, enthusiasm, and humor. I was anticipating a dumbed-down, U.S.-friendly interpretation of F1, but I have been proved wrong. Your news is up-to-date and accurate, the opinions of your presenters are well-informed, and the special articles that you run are great. I really enjoyed the interview with Clive Chapman and Bob Dance at Classic Team Lotus. I was a passionate Lotus fan from the 73 days of Fittipaldi and Peterson in the exquisite Lotus 72, so it brought back a lot of good memories. I clearly remember watching Andretti and Peterson in qualifying for the British Grand Prix in 1978. Mario was constantly popping into the pits, tweaking the anti-roll bar or the wing settings while Ronnie stayed out hurtling around, pushing the limit of the car, shaving off fractions of a second. In the end, the commentator announced over the PA system that Mario had pole position, but I had my stopwatch knew that Ronnie had just snatched it at the very last second. That was before the days of instant digital feedback. The race itself was disappointing for Lois, but that's motor racing. I thought that Nasser Hamid was very tactful in not referring to Colin Chapman's habit of building rather fragile cars, not to mention some of his suspect financial dealings. I worshipped Colin and Ronnie as a youngster, and we sorely miss both of their characters in F1 today. In my opinion, Lewis Hamilton is the nearest to carry on the spirit of Ronnie Peterson and Gilles Villeneuve. So I just wanted to write and say how much I appreciate the podcast. Best wishes for 2010, and keep up the great work. Postscript, you are backing Renault for 2010? Seriously? We all have to have a few laughs. Very nice. Thanks, Barney. That was a great email. Keep up the good work. Any comments on that, Nasser?
Yes, sir. I thank him for his interest in Measure Racing and F1 Weekly. And I note with interest the 78 British Grand Prix. Of all the races that have been run since I've been following, there are a few races and results that made me the happiest in my life. The 75 Italian Grand Prix, Regazzoni winning. 79, Regazzoni winning, Lauda finishing third, made him a champion. 78 British Grand Prix, Carlos Reutemann in the Ferrari, outfox Niki Lauda and Abraham Alfa, which was, I still remember how happy I was when I heard the news. And 1979, Ferrari 1-2, with Schecter winning the championship and the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. So these letters and, you know, when we meet these people and dialogues with them bring back a lot of very good memories.
That's true. And you know what they say, birds of a flat feather flock together.
Yeah.
So keep up the good work. That was a great email. Thanks, Barney. Here's another email suggesting a site. People are responding to my request to find a place to have a F1 weekly meeting in Montreal or Montreal. I was thinking Friday around 5 p.m. and somebody's, this gentleman, Mike Speed, suggests Hurley's Irish Pub, which is on Crescent Street or Rue Cresson. Apparently it's a big place, a lot of room, a lot of things happening. They have 30 different beers on tap. So if anybody thinks this is a good place, email me. But so far, the winner is Hurley's Irish Pub on Crescent Street in beautiful downtown Montreal. So that's the first suggestion. It sounds like a good one. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to keep it at the top of the stack. Real quickly, I'll mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Please make us a friend. And of course, if you'd like to advertise across from with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. Okay, we've gone over the time limit. That's it. Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for f1weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One. the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.